This podcast of The Exchange is supported by Doucette Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucettesurvey.com. That's D-O-U-C-E-T survey.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. It's called range anxiety, and it's a key reason more people don't buy electric cars: the fear of your battery running low with no charging station in sight. But in New Hampshire, this worry might be somewhat eased by recent news that Tesla Motors plans to put a so-called supercharger just off the highway in Portsmouth, the first of its kind here, with the power to juice up a car in about 20 minutes. The announcement is likely a welcome development for the estimated 600 Granite Staters driving fully electric vehicles, not hybrids. But while these numbers represent real growth, they're still a minuscule part of the overall automobile market, with most of us choosing regular gas combustion engine cars. However, scientists and engineers are working to change that, developing technologies to improve batteries, charging stations, and other aspects of electric vehicles. Today in The Exchange, we're covering electric cars in partnership with the Science Cafe New Hampshire in Nashua, and David Brooks, who writes the Granite Geek column for the Telegraph of Nashua and GraniteGeek.org. And let's hear from you, your questions about the science behind the electric car and how it's been evolving lately. The Exchange number 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And David Brooks joins us. David, thanks for making the time.
Thank you.
We also have two guests in the studio, Dolores Rebolito. She is with the she's coordinator at the Granite State Clean Cities Coalition. It's part of the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services. And Dolores, good to see you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
And also with us, Watson Collins, Manager of Research and Business Development at Northeast Utilities. And Watson, good to meet you. And thanks for making the trip from Connecticut to be here.
Oh, super great. Glad to be here.
Well, and Dave, I'll start with you, but I want to hear from everybody. What's the biggest problem with electric cars?
Well, you hit it right on the nose. It's obviously range anxiety. I mean, I drove up here and then I have to drive to work and I have to drive home today, which I couldn't do on any existing electric car except for a Tesla, which I can't afford. And that's really has been the Achilles heel of electric vehicles all along, and it's going to remain that way because their battery technology is not it's not software in the sense of it's not having these astonishing increases every year. It's a very, very mature technology, and so it's very hard to improve it enormously. So that's going to be the problem and the weakness, and that's what's holding them back.
Range anxiety, then, as I spelled out in the
range anxiety, exactly.
So when you say, you know, it's a mature technology and that makes it hard to improve upon it, first thing that came to my mind is, well why not?
Well, mature technologies mean that people have been working on them and trying to solve the problems for a long time, and so if there was an easy solution, probably somebody would have found it. I mean, we all have those lead-acid batteries in our car, and those are reasonably about as good as they're going to get. In fact, one of the very first electric cars that was sold up here in New Hampshire is something called a Wego. I don't know if anybody's even heard of that one. It's a Chinese knockoff of a smart car. And it was full of a lead-acid battery. So it weighed like, I don't know, 6 tons or something, and it had a range of about 12 miles. But it was an electric car. It was very cool. So, but now that there's many different new types of batteries. And so they're new, and lithium, various lithiums. And so they're improving, but we've come to expect, like, our iPhone gets 10 times better every year, and that's not going to happen with batteries.
Yeah, go ahead, Watson, jump in on that. This idea of a mature technology, and it's harder to make that better.
Well, I'm going to jump back to the range anxiety. Actually, people that drive electric cars have gas anxiety. They have anxiety about driving cars on gas, and a lot of the cars are plug-in hybrids. And those cars use gas and electric, and people get very anxious when those cars run on gas as opposed to electricity. So But there's a lot of developments and opportunities with the vehicles. So you can get a car that's all electric or a car that's a combination of gas and electric.
Yeah. So you told us, I think, before the show that you have an electric car. Is that right?
Yeah. No, I just bought one myself.
Did you drive it up here today from Connecticut?
I drove my work car, which is a Chevy Volt. So I drove a Volt and it went about 40 miles electric on the way up here. And then the rest of the way went on gas.
And that's a combination. So yeah. That's a hybrid. And
yeah.
Does the gas itself, when it's running on gas, Watson, is that charging the battery? So you don't have to worry about charging up your battery at a station.
Yeah, so you can just drive as long as you want to go, and you can keep refilling the car with gasoline if you don't have an opportunity to charge it. So.
Okay, so Dolores, given the concern about range anxiety and, you know, where am I going to charge this thing, why even go fully electric? Why not go hybrid and just stay there like Watson is?
Well, I think it's a personal choice. As far as emissions, definitely 100% electric is the way you want to go because it's zero emissions. There are a lot of benefits from fully electric vehicles. Number one being you don't need to change the oil. It's a lot of fun to drive. But the range anxiety is an issue, and New Hampshire is a very popular hybrid state. I predict that people will start buying more plug-in hybrids, and then they will switch to electric as the range is improved.
Okay. A couple of things I want to follow up there with you, Dolores. But let me also invite our listeners to join us at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Today in the exchange, we're looking at electric cars, some of the evolving science behind them, some of the problems that have come up with fully electric cars. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange at nhpr.org. Your questions, comments, and maybe personal experiences with 100% electric cars. 1-800-892-6477. Again, the email, exchange at nhpr.org. So, Dolores, you said more people you expect will go this way because fully electric cars are zero emissions. That's at the tailpipe, but there's still emissions involved with electric cars, right?
Well, the emissions involved with electric cars, fully electric cars, is obviously in the wheels-to-wheel production of the vehicle and any emissions the power plants exert. But as far as a trade-off, our power plants are fairly clean. As most people know, we are on a northeast grid. The power in New Hampshire doesn't necessarily feed New Hampshire. We're all part of this one big grid. And at least 40% is natural gas. As of last year, the other bulk of it was nuclear, which really, moreover, it is cleaner than certainly having a vehicle on gas.
Wells to wheel. So that means from – go ahead, David, and then you want to jump in and Watson. Wells
no,
to
I
wheel
just like
means,
that phrase too.
Yeah. So that means basically, Watson, from the very beginning when this car is constructed to what it takes to keep it on the road, and Dolores is right, there are emissions involved when that power plant, you know, creates electricity for us to plug in our cars.
Yeah, so the Union for Concerned Scientists did a study.
They did a big study on this recently, yeah.
Yeah, and for New England, they said that the electric vehicles look like 75-mile-per-gallon cars on an equivalent basis. So they were looking at all the emissions that you're talking about, that well-to-wheels emissions.
Yeah, you need to unravel that for us, though, because they did an interesting comparison between somebody driving electric in California, where there's a lot of green power, versus I think it was Colorado, where there's a lot of coal power. So just untangle that for us, if you could.
Yeah, because nationally, a lot of our power does come from coal, which isn't what happens in New England. And so the power, when it's more coal, the cars are less clean. The interesting thing with electric cars, though, is as the power supply gets cleaner over time with more renewables and other resources that are clean, the cars get cleaner.
Because the electricity that you're using to plug in your car is getting greener and cleaner, so to speak. Yeah, go ahead, David, and then I have a question for you too, Dolores. Yeah.
And the other point in that is it's a lot easier to clean up one power plant than it is to clean up 10,000 cars that are on the road spewing. And so if you do need to clamp down on it, with electric cars, you can clamp down on emissions at a power plant or two.
Well, easier said than done, though. We've seen a lot of court fights over this and clean air rules and
so forth. It's been 30 years we've been trying to clean up tailpipes on all these cars. So,
And Dolores, a quickie for you. You know, Watson made the point that a lot of other people have made that as our electric production gets cleaner, obviously the cars will be getting cleaner because they won't be relying on coal, for example, to charge themselves up. But as you know, it's been tough sledding for alternative energy in New Hampshire. Public concerns over hydro, wind, biomass, nuclear. So, you know, that's the ideal, that as we produce cleaner energy, our electric cars get cleaner. But what do you think the reality is? There's a lot of opposition to some of these alternative forms of power.
Well, I think the reality is it's going to happen. We're working very hard to keep our, particularly the Northeast, clean. We, as a state, embrace cleaner cars in the other states as well, because we share all of our pollution. 50% of all air pollution is from the transportation sector. We don't expect that petroleum will be totally phased out, but when we have a good mix in there, the air will be cleaner. Government also has implemented CAFE standards, which will require a certain amount of MPGs. I believe it's 54 by 2025. Correct me, guys.
54 miles a gallon.
Yes.
Wow, that's high.
That's an average. That's an average. And what it's saying is that we really need to clean up our vehicles in general, and electric vehicles is part of that mix.
Don't jump in, Watson. Yeah.
Yeah, but also I wouldn't portray electric vehicles the only reason to drive them is because they're environmentally beneficial. It's a great reason, but I would drive it to save money. A, they're a lot cheaper to fuel. So if you're one of these people that don't like spending money on fuel, you're going to save a lot of money on electric cars.
You're not spending $50 to fill up your tank.
You're going to spend $50 a month for electric vehicles as opposed to $50 a fill up.
Wow.
And then they're fun to drive. I mean, these cars have high torque right off the bat, so they accelerate pretty fun if you like driving that way. And I don't always recommend that, but it's also a way to reduce petroleum imports. So.
Did you want to jump in, Dolores?
Yeah,
and then David,
I wanted
to
mention also, as far as price of electric vehicle and the saving on gas, a lot of people are looking for a return on investment. I want to point out that there's a federal tax credit right now for $7,500. It is a tax credit. It's not taken off during sale, but if you go to fueleconomy.gov, it will show you how much you will save in fuel on overall owning the electric vehicle over an average MPG gas vehicle. It's a very helpful website.
So even though there's a high upfront cost, you're saying, and Watson's saying, over the long run, you're saving a lot of money because you're not filling up that tank once a week.
Well, there's not necessarily high upfront cost. It depends on what you have for a vehicle. The vehicles range from, I believe the Leaf was about $24,000 and goes up to the Tesla at $95,000.
All right. Well, and coming up, speaking of that, we will talk to one car salesman who sells the Chevy Volt. We'll talk about prices with him. We'll take a lot of your calls and comments. 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, excitement over electric cars in the Granite State. We're looking at the science behind how they work. We're covering this today in partnership with Science Cafe New Hampshire in Nashua, with David Brooks, who writes the Granite Geek Science column for The Telegraph and GraniteGeek.org. Dave Brooks is here with us, along with Watson Collins, Manager of Research and Business Development at Northeast Utilities, and Dolores Robledo. She's coordinator of Granite State Clean Cities Coalition, part of the New Hampshire Department of Environmental Services. Again, you can join us at 1-800-892-6477. We're looking at some of the evolving science and technology behind fully electric cars. 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, let's go to Concord. Ian is on the air. Hi, Ian. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi there. I just wanted to say that I drive a Chevy Volt and for a family car. Daily driving, you're driving less than 40 miles or about 40 miles, let's say. And we actually have a 10K solar system at home, and which charges, gives us electricity for the house and charges the car. We still produce more electricity than we use, and we never buy gas for that car. And it is just awesome to drive that car around, knowing that your energy to charge it is coming from alternative energy and it is a wonderful car to drive.
Wow, so you don't have range anxiety, Ian.
No, I have no range anxiety because most of your distance you drive is within most electric cars these days.
Sure. You plug it in at home at night.
Yep.
You charge it up overnight using your solar battery, so you're not even producing, you know, coal emissions there.
That's right. Yes.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Well, and so I just said it's awesome. And the payback, you know, when you talk about the slow payback for panels or something like that, when you're offsetting gasoline, boy, it's a lot faster, you know.
When you say a family car, how big is your family, Ian? I mean, some people feel like
it's just my wife and I now.
Not to get personal there, but could you fit a couple kids in there?
I'm a grandfather, but she uses it for work and stuff like that. I have to admit, I actually work as a carpenter and I drive a big truck. So it was my guilt that made me put in all those solar panels and get the electric car. But it's awesome.
Right.
It's awesome. And you know,
Ian, it's great to hear from you. Thanks a lot for calling in. Dave, what do you pull out of Ian's call? A couple of interesting points there.
Well, that one of the big advantages of an electric vehicle is you can generate your own, you know, fuel, as he has done, and that is obviously something you can't do with a natural gas car or you know, a diesel car or anything else. And that's still extremely niche market, but that's an option that it doesn't have otherwise.
So he plugs it in at home.
Right.
Is that how most people do it, Dave? I mean, we hear about this new charging station, the supercharger station off the highway in Portsmouth, but most people are doing it
Most people do it at home. Some do it at work. Not many employers offer that option yet. They should. And there aren't that many, you know, restaurants and grocery stores that can offer it, so you're lured to go shop there or eat there while your car charges. That's probably going to become bigger as time goes on. But realistically, those charging stations are only for the long-distance trips.
Yeah. Can you talk also, Dolores, about infrastructure or Watson, just sort of, you know, okay, that's fine for my normal life. I charge it at home. I go to work. I go home. But for different trips, let's say I have to go to Boston for something or Maine for something, can you talk about how good the infrastructure is here in New Hampshire and New England for people wanting to drive fully electrics?
Sure. As far as New Hampshire is concerned, we have about 16 charging sites that have level 2 or level 1 charging. Now, when I call it level 1, it's the plug that you plug your lamp in at home.
So public charging sites.
Public charging sites. Level 2 is more like the dryer plug. It's 240 volts. But those take a little longer. Okay, a lot longer.
How long?
And that's part of a problem. 8 to 10 hours to fully charge a vehicle from you know, really low to fully charged. However, those chargers that are located throughout New Hampshire, you can go in, plug in, have lunch, and have extra miles. It's not an all or nothing thing. You'll gain about 12 miles per hour of charge. Level 3 charging, which is called DC fast charging, which is similar to Tesla, and they are available for other vehicles as well. Those haven't come in New Hampshire yet. We're working on it. Those are the 20 to 30 minute where they'll charge 80%. But I agree. Most people go home at night, plug it in, unplug before they go to work.
Wow, that's a real problem, isn't it, Dolores? I mean, 30 minutes, an hour, a couple hours? Who's got that kind of time?
Well, it's certainly a change for our society that's used to having the 7-minute, you know, in the gas station. However, I think it's doable, particularly with the DC fast chargers. You plug in, you go in, you do a little shopping or you go to the restaurant and you come back out and you're charged. You're fully charged for the range. So, you know, as the range issue is an issue, so is, you know, the time it takes. As I said, most people will charge at home. People in
and then they'll be all good for the day.
Well, yes. And people with condos and they don't have charging stations, they're looking to charge at work. We're working on getting more employers to do charging. The Department of Energy has a workplace charging challenge for large companies to sign on to provide for their employees. And then the third option is to charge at destinations or en route to destinations.
destinations. And that's what we're working on, is to make sure we have a network in New Hampshire for all of the people who come up to our hiking and skiing and events. They'll have a place to charge so they can make it.
Sure. So you don't want people with electric vehicles living, you know, in the mid-Atlantic states or something to not come to New Hampshire because they say, whoa, I can't charge up there. And what am I going to do?
That's right.
Do you want to jump in, Watson? Then we'll go back to our callers.
Yes. So it's a new way to think about how you refuel your car. Completely different.
Yeah, it's a little scary, I got to say.
Yeah. And you know, now we're used to running a tank towards the, you know, towards the end of the tank, and then you refuel it. With electric cars, you plug it in all the time every day. And so you plug it in at night, you're sleeping, you don't need the car overnight, it has plenty of time to charge. And then when you're driving longer distances, as there's more efforts to install these DC fast chargers when you're going those longer distances.
Those are the superchargers.
Yeah, those superchargers. You have more of the opportunity to extend the range of these cars.
It does seem like an opportunity for economic development. I mean, if you've got a supercharger, instead of just having the supercharger there, you could have, you know, a little mall or a restaurant or something. If folks have to hang out, then maybe they'll stick around and spend some money.
Yeah, that's where you see a lot of these focused on locations where people can get a meal, do some shopping, do other things like that.
Let's take some more calls. Thanks for that one. The number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. In Manchester, Ron is calling in. Hi, Ron. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. It's great to be on the show. For years, I've been worried about if we switch over to battery-powered cars, what's going to happen to the price of lithium? If everybody has these giant packs of lithium in their cars, you know, we have to, at this point, we're importing lithium from other countries, and eventually the price will go so high that it will be prohibitive, I think. I mean, you know, look what happened. We tried to divert corn into fuel for cars. Now the price of beef is really high because we're diverting food into fuel, and no one can afford to buy beef anymore.
You know, Ron, this is a great, great question. And Dave Brooks, we should talk about this. What about the compounds that are used to make these batteries? How easy or hard are they to extract from the land? Maybe you first, Watson, and then the cost issue. It's a super question, Ron. Thank you.
So it's interesting. Lithium that we use now is just on the ground. It's a salt, and we never really search for it. So industries haven't really searched for it. So the lithium that we're using in batteries now is just what was very apparent on the surfaces. Now they're starting to look for lithium supplies. So now they're finding more lithium supplies because they never looked for it before. And the batteries, which you heard about the Tesla's Gigafactory that they're building out west now, this is going to dramatically increase the amount of battery capacity in the world that's available. And so they're going to get the resources from lithium and others to make these produce these batteries. So it's really going to bring the price of batteries down over time.
What other compounds are we talking about besides lithium? I mean, we hear about China investing heavily in Latin America and Africa in order to buy up metals and so forth to help with their technological push. I mean, is there a concern that at some point there might not be enough of these compounds around, or that we might have to pay high prices for them?
In the batteries themselves, the compounds that people are talking about in China aren't necessarily in the batteries themselves. They're in the electric motor part of it.
So not in the battery, but in the electric motor. So still an issue. Do either of you want to jump in, Dave?
One thing that capitalism is very good at is learning to extract materials to maintain its sales and profit. That actually is not something – it may not be good for the earth in the long run.
Well, sure, because there's the environmental question.
Right. But in terms of cost, I am confident that the capitalists will figure out how to get enough of this stuff.
Well, thank you for the question, Ron. It's a good one. And to Holderness next, where Carol is on the line. Hi, Carol. You're on the exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
I live in Holderness in the summer and then in California the rest of the year, and we lease a lease out there. And the infrastructure situation is markedly better, but we still basically drive the car to work, drive the car home, and plug it in. But out there, my school has a charger. Most municipal parking structures have chargers. A lot of grocery stores have chargers. And our city also has a program where they put a thing in your car so that when you plug your car in at your house, it only charges in the middle of the night when electricity usage is lowest, And then they reduce what they charge you for electricity. So there's all kinds of things in place to encourage the use of electric cars. We can use the HOV lane. My husband gets half off on his bridge toll every day because he has an electric car.
So, wow. What part of California do you live in, Carol?
We live in Palo Alto.
In Palo Alto. Okay, so you're right there in Silicon Valley. And,
Yeah. The Tesla dump.
I actually was in Mountain View last year on a big trip and visited a relative who works at Google. And there were two huge, you know, banks of places to park your car and charge while you were at work.
Right.
So that's really interesting. So for your day-to-day life, Carol, you know, basically work, school, home, grocery store, you know, it's there. You're covered.
Yeah, it's great. And when we move here, we will just use it for that and not count on there being any place we can charge it besides our garage.
Well, so even with this sort of electric car nirvana in California, you're going to move to Holderness at some point permanently?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Well, we'll be glad to have you, Carol. Dolores, what do you think about this infrastructure that she describes? It just seems like another planet.
Well, it's California, and the California Air Resources Board has a lot of mandates there to keep their air clean. They have been the poster child for what it should be. Actually, Oregon and Washington are jumping on board as well. They have a lot of incentives. I'm not sure if it's local or state incentives, but there are the mandates that they have to adhere to. And you would find new electric vehicles that manufacturers are making, they'll start in California. They'll start selling them in California. And we too, hope to have a Nirvana at some point in New Hampshire.
All right. Well, we've been talking a lot about this from the science side, but a couple questions on the consumer side. And with us now for more on that is Michael Mercer. He's service manager at Banks Chevrolet and primary salesperson for the Chevy Volt. That's an extended range electric car. So it drives about 40 miles on an electric battery and then uses a small gas engine to extend the range. And Michael Mercer, thank you for being with us.
Good morning.
So did I describe it right, Michael? That's basically how the Volt works.
You hit it right on the nail on the head.
Okay. How much does a Chevy Volt cost?
Right now, a 2014 is going for $34,995.
So about $35,000. So a little more expensive than I would spend for another type of Chevrolet car.
Correct. But what I like to mention is if you look at the 2014 Volt for that price tag, if you look at all the options that are provided in that car today and go compared to another like comparable car, you know, say a gas, you know, fully gas vehicle, you get a pretty good amount of car for the money you're getting.
Do you have a Volt, Michael?
2011.
A 2011 Volt. Okay, so 3 years. So how often does that gas motor kick in for you, Michael? Are you electric most of the time?
Well, I'll tell you my route that I do now. I live down in Watertown, Mass. So my route is probably about 73 to 75 miles one way. I might as well say with the 40-volt charge, I'm getting about one way all electric and one way all the way back on gas. If you want to do my overall combination, I'm getting about 75 miles to a gallon, gas and electric combined.
Okay. So as you are driving on that on the gas engine, your battery's being charged up. Do you have to plug it at home, Michael, or not?
I charge here at the dealership and I charge it at home. So 40 miles is all electric, the other, say, 30. Is gas, combined gas and electric, depending on, you know, where I'm driving. I, you know, get down in the city, even though the lithium battery on the instrument panel says it's depleted, I still run an electric because we don't fully deplete the battery.
What's the biggest question, Michael, that you get from potential Volt buyers, people who come into your dealership?
Well, the biggest one that I'm understanding myself now, since now I live down in the Boston city area, is where do I charge it if I'm in a city area? That's the hurdle I'm getting over at the moment. Unfortunately, if you're in the city and there is no place to plug in, it'd be nice if we had some type of a solar panel, which I'm working with a company to try to get something to put in a Volt, but there is nothing at the moment of time.
Sure, a solar panel to help you out in a pinch there, to give you your battery a little more juice. How many Volts do you sell in a year, Michael?
Since we've been selling the Volt in 2011, I can count easily our dealership's probably put out at least over 35 of them.
35 since you guys started selling the Volt. So,
correct.
You know, sounds like 7 or 8 a year.
Correct.
Are you surprised it's not more?
I know it's new technology. I know we need the infrastructure of charging stations around to help support like a gas car. And once those infrastructures come around, such more as, you know, like parking lots, parking garages, you know, mall stores, I think it'll be something that's going to be, you know, taken off very quickly.
The infrastructure that our caller Carol described. I'm not sure if you caught that, Michael.
Yeah, like the 220 chargers, level 2 charger.
That's the supercharger that we talked about, right. Michael, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Michael Mercer, again, service manager at Bank Chevrolet, primary salesperson for the Chevy Volt, as we heard, an extended-range electric car. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, let's go back to our listeners, and Jerry's in Merrimack. Hi, Jerry. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Fine.
So I've been a diesel aficionado for a couple of decades now, and I'm curious why they haven't come out with a diesel electric hybrid. And, you know, only the gas electrics, because inherently diesel seem a lot more efficient.
Yeah, it's a good question, Jerry. Thank you for calling. Dolores, do you know?
Well, actually, I do believe that one company has a diesel hybrid. Not sure if it's in the United States, but I believe it's Volkswagen. And I do want to mention that PSNH and New Hampshire Electric Co-op are just two of several fleets in New Hampshire that have diesel electric hybrid line trucks and roundabouts. So there is, the technology is there, but I have to agree with you. There are not a lot of them out there. But given passenger cars, there are not a lot of diesels now. Maybe there'll be some call for it.
It's funny. We have this sort of old-fashioned view, I think, of diesel. We think of, you know, smelly old diesel trucks. But now, from what I understand, correct me if I'm wrong, folks, diesel's a lot cleaner, and some people are driving fully diesel cars. Dave, do you want to jump in?
No, that is correct. A diesel is not what it was that I think of.
It's not your father's diesel.
Not my father's diesel, exactly. Yeah. There are technical reasons why a diesel doesn't work as well as a hybrid. And if I'd thought, I would have looked them up before I came on the show. It doesn't the electric hybrid does not match as well with the strengths of a diesel engine as well as it does with a gasoline engine. I think that is a big reason for it.
Yeah. All right. Well, coming up after a break, Watson, I want to turn to you to the point that we got from Michael Mercer, who's, you know, trying to sell Chevy Volts, and that is that people are interested, but they're just really concerned about where they're going to charge it. I want to hear from you what utilities are doing here in New England to ease some of that anxiety. We'll take a lot more of your calls to the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at NHPR.org. More of your comments and questions in just a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow in The Exchange, the hot debate over gambling in Massachusetts and what it may mean for the longtime gambling debate in the Granite State. That's tomorrow in The Exchange. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at New Hampshire and the electric car. We're digging into some of the science behind electric cars. And you can join us, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And all of you, before we return to our listeners, Watson Collins, I did want to ask you a little bit more about, again, this idea of infrastructure. You've got people who want to drive electric cars. We heard from Michael Mercer, who's selling Volts at Bank Chevrolet in the Concord area. And he said the biggest question he gets from people is, where am I going to charge these things? Now, you work for Northeast Utilities, a big utility here in New England. What are you guys doing to kind of ease this anxiety people have?
Yeah, so we're starting to work with a couple customers, communities, to get them set up with charging infrastructure. Manchester, Nashua, we're going to get work with them to get set up the craft brew at the Peace Trade Port. Antioch University and the airport, we're going to have infrastructure installed at those locations. So you're going to start seeing more infrastructure. But I do want to stress that the infrastructure to charge your car is going to be at home. And a lot of this in the public, in the infrastructure in the public, is really for awareness. We'll never see an electric charging infrastructure that looks like a gas station. So that's expectation. Don't expect to see big signs on the highway that says, you know,
well, why not?
So
why
much
not?
Per kilowatt hour. Because most of the charging will happen while you park, as opposed to waypoint charging. So,
you know, Dolores mentioned earlier, New Hampshire's a big tourism state, and certainly a lot of people come here from Massachusetts and New York and New Jersey and Connecticut. So it seems like we need some kind of infrastructure to entice those folks to come and stay.
Yeah, no, hotels are great to help tourists because that's a great place for people to go where they want to charge a car, and it replicates what they do at home.
Yeah, go ahead, Dave.
I know that Simon Properties, which owns a bunch of malls, including Pheasant Lane, Mall in New Hampshire, they have started installing chargers at their malls. Not the ones in New Hampshire, unfortunately, but they've put out a big press release saying, hey, we're doing this, so come here and shop, and you can charge up. And that's the sort of thing that's going to happen for the tourists.
Sure, because you're hanging out for a while.
Absolutely.
It's not like a gas station where you expect to be in and out in 10 minutes.
Right, exactly.
Right, and Dolores talked earlier about how long it takes, and I kind of gasped. So, yeah, go ahead, Dolores.
Well, the North Country is being proactive in making sure that there's some charging stations up there. No fast chargers just yet, but the Mount Washington Auto Road is managed by an EV enthusiast, and they have meetings there a lot where the electric vehicles drive up and down Mount Washington. They also have a charging station there and a smattering of charging stations up in the North Country. They're getting ready for tourists. And, you know, we need to fill in the gaps, of course, so that people can comfortably come up from the southern regions and enjoy our state. But it's starting and it's happening. I want to point out that the alternative fuels data center has a list, and I believe that PSNH has a list of the charging stations in our state.
Yeah, and we've been talking a lot about, again, the anxiety, the fear about you're not going to be able to get a charge. But, Dave, from what I understand, on the science side, there's something in an electric car called regenerative braking, where when you brake, some of that heat actually helps recharge the battery.
Yeah, and that's been around sort of for a while by the standards of this. I have it in my Civic hybrid. Any hybrid pretty much has it. And you're right, exactly. It's taking waste heat that otherwise that for 100 years of cars has just been made things hotter, and it's turning it back into electricity, which is using to keep the battery. It's being used to keep the battery charged as you go along. And that increases the range. But that's already factored into the range when they tell you. When they tell you you have a range of X miles, they are calculated that you'll be doing a certain amount of regenerative braking.
So don't stomp on the brakes just to charge.
Although it's
up.
Neat because you see all the lights on your on dashboard telling you you're charging the battery. You can play this game when you're driving along. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. We won't talk about distracted driving
right
now.
Right.
That's another show. But it's an issue. Yeah, our number 1-800-892-6477. And let's go to Josh in Plymouth. Hi, Josh. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, good morning.
Morning. Go ahead, Josh. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I was thinking that maybe a good place to start charging stations would be if we got more of our mass transit and shipping and trucking on to electric, because they have usually they have a much more, you know, they go on certain routes, they have schedules. It's a lot more scheduled than, like, the individual driver doing what they have to do during the day. And then, you know, those charging stations could build up to that, and then individual drivers benefit. Maybe.
Okay. So, and like, Josh, I think we're losing you on your car there, but go ahead. Did you want to jump in, Dave?
UPS and FedEx both, I believe, are pushing electric vehicle fleets because it makes perfect sense for them, and your caller is exactly right. This truck that goes out, it does X miles every day. It returns to the same place at night. It's perfect for electric vehicles. And I believe that's actually going to be one of the major growth areas for electric vehicles.
Go ahead, Dolores.
And one of the benefits of a place like UPS is that they're doing a lot of start and stopping. And as soon as they let off the gas, that regen braking is starting to charge up the battery. Right now, they're working on the technology because bigger battery for a bigger vehicle. And most of those places have private charging stations back at the central depot.
Here's an email from Jordan that I want to share with you. And he makes two points, Jordan in Auburn. First, he says, when device AA batteries are dead, we swap them out and properly dispose. This should be the case at fuel stations. For cars that can't have built-in solar panels on their roofs, pull into the station, swap out your battery for a nominal fee, and drive off. Then the batteries could be recharged by the station. So what do you think about that, Watson? You know, we've talked about people not wanting to wait and so forth. What about Jordan's idea?
So they'd be a little bit bigger than AA batteries, the battery swapping for the cars. And so it gets actually technically kind of a bit complicated. And, you know, in the auto industry, they like to say that they have a better engine, better reliability, better whatever it is from the automaker side. And so, the battery swapping commoditizes the batteries, and the automakers kind of want to make that special. They want to produce the best one, and they want to say they have the best one.
I love that idea. You go in there, and just like Jiffy Lube, they just swap it in and out. Is it Better Place? There was a company that called Better Place that was doing it in Europe, and they've been struggling with it. The concept sounds great because you could get a fresh battery within a short amount of time. And as you know, time is something we have to decide whether or not we want to wait around.
Sure, sometimes you just can't, you know.
Yeah, that's true. But as of this time, I don't know of anyone who does it, but it has been considered a lot.
Yeah, every once in a while you just got to go and something comes up and boom. Dave, do you want to jump in? Then I have another question for you.
There were technical issues with it. If you have a battery, obviously, inside a car, it needs to be safe, so it needs to be really enclosed safely, so that makes it harder to open it up and pull it out. And there were cost issues with it. How do you give a person a credit for the amount of charge that's left on the battery when you swap it out? So there's a money aspect to it as well.
Well, Jordan starts his email by saying, ignoring that cities with public transit are far more sustainable than spread out rural towns and polluting cars, and then he goes on to say two solutions and talk about, you know, this idea of swapping out the battery. But let's take that sentence. And Jordan, thank you for bringing that up. Dave Brooks, some involved in this issue of green transportation say, you know, instead of everybody just jumping into their own electric car or hybrid electric car, we should have more mass transit, electric trains, for example, put, you know, 500 people on a train, riding your bike locally. That's a much bigger reduction in pollution and carbon than everybody zipping around in their own electric car.
Yeah, you hear that argument a lot. There's some people that argue that the electric car is kind of a distraction from what we really need to do, which is sort of redesign society to reduce the overall cost and pollution transportation. Realistically, I think that's terrific, and it's happening actually faster than I thought it would. People are moving back to cities specifically to get into mass transit. But realistically, and particularly in New Hampshire, it's, you know, the bus is never going to come to Mount Vernon to pick me up to go to work. So I think we are all going to be in individual private vehicles for a long time. And so you might as well make those individual private vehicles as pollution-free as possible and as cheap.
I don't know. Is it getting us off the hook, Dolores? It's just easier to move from one car to another instead of rethinking the way we live our lives.
Well, perhaps, but I would have to say that I think everyone that I know would love to have a mass transit system in place, more of a mass transit system in New Hampshire. As I understand it, because of our rural nature and our work habits and when we go to work and our individuality, it hasn't been really quickly coming. I can tell you there is an east-west van that takes people to the airport, and that's new. That's the last couple of years ago. I would like to see more mass transit, too. I think it's going to be a mix. I don't think it's going to be one or the other.
All right. Well, Jordan, I appreciate the point. And let's go back to our callers. Steve's calling from Thornton. Hi, Steve. You're on The Exchange. Go ahead.
Hi. How you doing? I just wanted to bring up the point that $34,000 leaves out a great deal of every man. That's a lot of money.
It is a lot
for a specialized car. And I guess my socioeconomic class has been left out of the hybrids, has been left out of the electric, and I'm a teacher. So I'll leave that comment at that.
Thank you. And good for you for, you know, educating the next generation of Americans. We appreciate it. Go ahead, Watson. What do you think? It is expensive.
Yeah, and a lot of the cars, the Volt and the Nissan Leaf, which are the primary two vehicles that are getting sold in this space, they have very attractive lease deals, and a large majority of these cars are leased. And
so you're not putting down $34,000.
You're not putting down $34,000,
and
in some areas, people are getting leases for the cars of around $200 a month. That's the lowest I've ever heard of somebody getting an electric vehicle, and all the savings they're going to get from the fuel cost, and so some people look at this as the economical choice.
I see. So don't just look at the sticker price. There's other savings down the line, especially, again, $50 once a week to fill up your tank. Go ahead, Dolores, and then Dave, I have another question for you.
Well, just like any other car, there are certain levels of luxury in electric vehicles. The Leaf is very nice. The Smart EV is very nice. It's larger than you think. But the Chevy Volt is one sweet vehicle. It's leather seats, and you press the gas pedal, and you just go, and it is really wonderfully luxurious vehicle. Then you get into the BMW, and then you get into the Tesla, and you just, they're all levels of electric vehicles. So it depends on, you know, what you can afford. I too would recommend leasing. Give it a try. I mean, it's very reasonable rates to lease, depending on how far you plan to go each year. But it's different with depending on the vehicle.
Well, he's right. There is this sort of elitist air, David Brooks, to the electric car, probably only made more elitist by the fact that Tesla is the one who's really taking off with electric cars. They've sort of moved in just recently, and they're now really charging ahead with this. And their cars cost about $90,000.
Depending, yeah, the good ones cost $90,000, and I took a test ride in one, and
is there a bad one?
Oh, well, there's one that doesn't have the 300-mile range, because basically the difference in cost is the amount of battery.
It's a big range, yeah. I'm
not a sports car guy, but I took a test drive in one, and they are an astonishing machine. One other cost aspect that's harder to factor is the reduction in what you spend on maintenance. And this is really – they haven't been around – fully electric vehicles haven't been around long enough, I think, for people to really kick it in. But you do not have to, you know, do your oil changes and things like that. And more importantly, there's so many fewer moving parts in an electric car as compared to a gasoline. Gasoline engine is this really complicated thing, and if we didn't have it and somebody suggested doing it, we're gonna power ourselves by exploding this carcinogenic liquid that you're gonna carry around behind you. People would say you're out of your mind, and so there is a cost savings over time in having an electric vehicle from not having to do maintenance.
Yeah, so it's hard again for Steve, our teacher, our caller, who says, "Hey, $34,000, it's a lot," but over time, if you think about it that way.
Right. And a lot of people manage to find $40,000 to buy themselves their F-150. So it's because that's something we're used to people getting. We know kind of what the psychological benefit is.
Well, and speaking of expense, here's an email from Pam. How expensive are the repairs for these vehicles, and how long and replacement expense is the life of the battery? Good questions, Pam. Watson, you want to jump in? You've got a hybrid, and I think you said you have a fully electric too, right?
Yeah, I have a fully electric. So the repairs, like you said, the brakes last longer. There's no oil changes. So there's a lot of the maintenance costs that really go down when you have electric vehicles. What does happen, though, if there is a problem with the battery or something more complicated, it's going to be an expensive repair, and it's probably going to be covered by warranty. So it's for the repair business part of it, it's less regular stuff, but it probably works out to the same dollars to the repair facility, but to the consumer, it's going to save them money.
Wow. So, you know, with my regular car, I have to bring it at every year or so for the regular maintenance. You're saying that goes away?
Yeah. So for the regular maintenance, the next maintenance I have to bring my car back in is in 2017. So that's when the next scheduled maintenance is for my car.
Okay, one more super geeky technical question, but a really important one. Maybe you, Dolores. I'm not sure who wants to answer this. We had a very cold winter in New Hampshire last winter. What about the battery? How do the batteries do in this freezing cold weather?
Well, I actually did an article for one of our industry papers regarding how it did do in our winter, because cold and hot make you want to run the heater and want to run the air conditioner, and that affects your batteries. On the overall, I think people with a Chevy Volt had no problem. They just went into the Volt has a mechanism that when you turn on the heater, the internal combustion engine kicks in as not to waste the battery on heat, because it does drain the battery quickly. Nissan Leaf people were talking about in the bitter cold, keep it in a garage, and they plug it in and warm up the vehicle. If you don't have a garage, you can't do this, but they plug it in and they warm up the vehicle before they start it up. You don't have to worry about any emissions in your garage, because it's an electric vehicle, and that's what they do, is they warm it up. And you know, it depends. As Watson said, you get very excited about your electric vehicle, so you want to see how far you can go. And I've heard stories about people not putting the heater on for it until they absolutely have to see how far the range is. But like gasoline vehicles, your range is reduced.
So the cold does suck some of the charge out of the battery. Is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Did you want to jump in, Watson or Dave?
Yeah, no, and I think that's what Dolores was hitting on is that these cars, you when they're plugged in, you actually do the preconditioning, so you warm up the car before you get in. So it's pretty cool. You go into a warm car.
Okay, Dave Brooks.
And I think that's part of the fact that if electric cars do catch on, it's going to change our habits and that we can't assume that they're going to be exactly the same as a gasoline car except with electricity. We're going to change the way we do things a little bit, some of it better and some of it a little more annoying.
All right. Real interesting. Thank you all very much for being here. I really appreciate it. By the way, if you love hearing about science, these Science Cafe conversations are ongoing around the state. Find out more about them on our website, nhpr.org. And the conversation continues on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. Post your comments there and read those from other listeners who are interested in this topic of the science of electric cars. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer is Dan Colgan. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producer is Faith Mikesell. Our volunteer is James Pouliot. Our intern is Renee Taylor. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.